This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And it's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Matt, are you a fan of chess?
I used to play chess when I was a kid. I wasn't
really good.
Terribly good at it, but I enjoyed it. It was fun.
So it's one of the oldest games in the world. And you know, today in the, you know, the world of smartphones and esports and live streaming, Twitch and YouTube gaming and all that, chess has been like kind of one of those like old games where, you know, newer kids go like, "What's that?" Like, you know, it doesn't seem fun. And to be fair, a lot of the commentary of chess tournaments back in the days, like in the 90s and stuff, it was very dull. It was very serious. You know, it's very different from what you get from streaming these days, right?
No, and of course, slow as well.
Take hours and
between
no
moves,
winner.
And
no winner at the end of the day, right? So now with, you know, live streaming, you know, every game is fast paced. It's shooter based, and there's so much of like trash talking that happens. Surprisingly, chess is making a comeback in this sector. And this is coming out from a report from NBC News, who actually interviewed Alexandra Botez, who is a professional chess player and who's now started to, you know, do live streaming on Twitch. And she's got like 60,000 followers or something like that. And, you know, she adds these kind of elements that make esports, you know, live streaming fun. The, you know, the fast-paced action, trash talking, which is super important, into her live stream. And people are actually jumping on board and they're enjoying this kind of competitive chess tournaments.
I mean, to be honest, you know, you sent me the link to this and I was kind of like, really? And then the first thing I did before I read the article was I clicked on the video link. It's from CNBC, right? And I just watched the clip and it is absolutely incredible because she is playing games against people and crushing them. I mean, she's making moves every few seconds while she's trash talking, while she's talking, having, you know, chatting with her fans as well.
While being interviewed.
and being interviewed by this camera crew. And you just think, good grief, whatever is going on in this woman's head is absolutely astonishing. Mm. I mean, she is truly, truly a smart person.
But it's I guess it amplifies the you know, chess itself. It's a game itself. It's a game of multiple steps in advance,
no,
right?
Of course. So, you know, if you go back to, obviously you were saying about, you know, the chess tournaments and it's quite staid and, you know, it's quite conservative and very slow paced. But when you see street chess, like you see like Spike Jonze movies and stuff, and they'll go into Central Park
and stuff,
and they have the timer and there's all the trash talking and there's all, the, you know, psyching out the opponents, and it's really fast paced.
Yeah.
That's where I think there's this crossover between the esports and the kind of chess world.
Mm. Now, you know, it's not the levels of Fortnite and the Leagues of Legends and the Dotas of the world yet. You know, it is just slowly gaining traction. But it's nice to see games that have probably been forgotten in the last decade. You know, even though chess is now mostly being played online, I'm sure, you know, most of you have probably, the last time you've experienced chess is probably, you know, when you went on to like chess.com or boardgames.com and played chess online. Or one of your built-in games in your, you know, old Windows PC.
Or in my case, actually playing with a board and pieces against a human.
As in like a physical chess board?
Yeah.
That's strange.
I mean, I had a chess computer, but it wasn't one that moved the pieces for you, because that was like mega technology. So you'd make a move and you'd program in the spaces, but you had to move the pieces on the board yourself, and the computer would give you its moves in return, and it beat me every time.
Anyways, you know, it's now gaining traction, and I, you know, I've went on to then, you know, went on to her YouTube and checked out some of the other matches that she's played across, and it is still intense, as you know, every professional chess tournament was in the past, but it's now added these kind of elements that has made it actually quite exciting. I went through a 13-minute video of her and, you know, competing against another player, also live streaming. So they had, you know, two people side by side playing chess, which is in the center of my screen. And I was just fascinated by it. And it made me want to play chess again, which is a great game to play.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first thing I thought when I watched this is, wow, I have to start playing chess again. And the thing is, you know, she's doing all of these things at the same time. You're struggling to keep up with her as a viewer. You know, I was trying to follow the matches that were happening on the screens and listen to her while she's doing all of these things at the same time. I was just like, wow, this is just too intense.
Yeah, go and check it out. Like, if you have some time, go on to YouTube and just search for, you know, Alexandra Botez, or just search for chess live streaming. You would find loads of interesting, you know, esports kind of competitions that these professional chess players have found an avenue and you know, have garnered two fans, me and Matt.
Oh, yeah. And I'm waiting for the esports solitaire. And Snake
and Leather. Yeah.
That's the one. Esports snakes, man.
Come on, bring it on. We'll be right back with King of Culture after this. BFM 89.9.
Bluff Free Medium. BFM 89.9.
And we're back. It is Geek Squawk's King of Culture time, Matt.
Well, today we have cut, copy, and paste. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that's not kind of the usual thing that we talk about, but when you think about the number of times a day you copy and paste something.
Wow.
It's astonishing. It's one of those technologies that you take for example. You take for granted. Now, we have the sad news today that Larry Tesla, who's a computer engineer, he's the man who pioneered cut, copy, and paste, and he's actually passed away at the age of 74. But we should take a little time to actually think about the impact of the technology he developed. Now, he worked for Xerox. He developed the technology in its basic form back in 1973 when he was a member of the PARC, the Palo Alto Research Center, because it's become one of the most unique parts of our computing experience. He was a champion of what's been called modeless computing because, you know, in early computers, what you did in one program stayed in that program. Mm-hmm. The idea that you could take something from one and put it into another just really didn't exist. So he was one of the kind of early recruits to Apple, and Apple's computers were some of the first kind of home PCs that really made use of copy and paste.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, once we all started using Microsoft desktops and Office and Word, you know, copy and paste has become just an integral part of everything we do today. I mean, I was talking to you before the show. With my computers, I have something called cloud copy and paste. So, or cloud clipboard, I don't know what it's called. So I can copy and paste from my phone and it instantly goes to my computer or to my tablet or whatever device. And a couple of days ago, I tried copying a photo from one machine and pasting it onto the other machine, thinking, there's no way that this is going to happen. Text is fine. When I'm normally, if I want to sync a photo, I send it to Dropbox or, I send it to a cloud service. So I know what's happening.
Yeah.
But it did copy and paste. I was able to paste a photo instantly from one computer to another computer. Yeah. And that just feels like magic. That feels not real. I can understand how I can do it with text because we've been doing that for forever. But to be able to copy and paste photos
through the air
is just really weird. And all of that is down to this guy, Larry Tesla. So, you know, we take these things for granted and we should give the proper recognition to someone, especially now that, you know, we've learned that he's passed, but we have his invention for, well, the rest of our time, hopefully.
It is like magic. It is something that we take for granted, being able to just copy and paste without even thinking. But if you look back in like the engineering side or the development side,
the complexity
it is just
of the coding
so,
to be able to do that is just mind-numbing. Yeah. Literally mind-numbing.
Anyways, let's move on to air travel because ever since it took off in 1950s, nothing much has really changed besides like maybe having tight lighter seats, safer flights, definitely. The rise and fall of seat back screens, but planes themselves, the way they look, if you go back and do a Google search about, you know, planes in 1950s and 1960s, they pretty much look the same.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look back at all the propeller planes of the pre-Second World War, you know, they look the same, just bigger and with jet engines instead.
But there's one idea that has been in air since 1990s is kind of catching a second wind, and this is thanks to a new effort by Airbus, because just recently at the Singapore Air Show, the European plane maker revealed a little model of an aircraft it says that could slash fuel consumption by 20% compared to today's single aisle jet. It's called the Maverick, and it's an acronym for the Model Aircraft for Validation and Experimentation of Robust Innovation Controls.
Do you think they got a cool name first and work backwards?
I think so. I think they called it Maverick and they're like, all right, what does Maverick stands? Let's think about it, because it really is a mouthful. But it's basically a triangular blended wing body kind of plane, which has a...
Yeah, I mean, it's fat.
Yeah.
I mean, it
yeah.
looks like the B-52 stealth bombers. It's got that kind of squat. Fat, you know, it's wide rather than long, right?
Yeah, but it's actually you know, because saving 20% of fuel consumption is astonishing, because this is an industry where, you know, I think when I did an event with GE a couple of years ago, and they spoke about how they work with, you know, the aviation industry, and how you can, you know, that 1% makes, you know, billions of US dollars in saving. If you're talking about 20% for an aircraft, that's humongous.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? There was something that came out recently where one of the airlines changed the print quality of the paper on their in-flight magazine, and they saved something like $100,000 just from fuel savings because of weight reduction. And all they'd done was shave about a gram off the weight of every single copy of the magazine.
Wow. So this is clearly an industry that is tweaking anything that it's possible, right? So 20% is going to see a huge improvement. But for the passengers, though, there will be some changes, because one is because of the design of the plane, you're not really going to get a lot of you know, window seats, and even if you do, it's probably going to be really expensive because it's so limited. But I've seen some photos of it when you shared me this link, and I think it's actually giving a lot of designers the freedom to re-innovate the cabin,
because
cabin's just really dull.
No, and you can have a lot more walkways, so you can give people more of a sense of space, even if they don't have those windows. And I think it was probably a couple of years ago that we talked about some in-flight technologies, for example, replacing the windows completely with screens, because another structural, not issue, but making the windows strong enough, one, it adds a lot of weight, but it increases the fuel consumption. It makes the structure less rigid. So replacing windows with screens is a great way to save weight and to make the structures stronger as well. So you might see the windows simply being phased out of a machine like this completely and being replaced with these wraparound screens that make you think that you can just step out into the sky.
I'm actually full on for, you know, re-innovating how the airplane looks like. But the only issue with this, though, even though it kind of took its first flight last year, the only issue is that they're still not sure about the stability, because without the horizontal and vertical tails that tube and wing aircraft actually have, maintaining a stable and controllable aircraft is a lot more challenging. And this is according to one of the researchers in the University of Toronto, an aerodynamics researcher. So that's why Airbus says controllability is the primary interest area for the Maverick program.
I just say strap everyone in upside down at the beginning of the flight, and by the time you land, you're the right way up.
Sounds like, you know, everyone's going to be bats then when they step into the Maverick.
Or even, you know, just have one of those internal gyro things so that the plane can tip left and right, but the seats stay level all the time.
There you go. Innovations.
I've solved it. I've solved it. The check, please, aviation industry.
Now, you would have probably seen foldable phones are making a comeback. Motorola Razr, they, I think, you know, went out to market a couple of weeks ago. And
has it come out? I missed that.
Not in Malaysia, but, you know, in the US. But even then, apparently in the US, it's been really difficult to get your hands on the Motorola Razr because it's only on Verizon, if I'm not mistaken. But the Samsung Galaxy Flip, which is which is the other flip phone that has just launched recently, and I think that will come to Malaysia very soon. It's flip phones were a cool thing. I had a Motorola Razr, and it was probably, I think, on the top of the coolest phones I've ever owned.
I've still got my Razr. It doesn't work anymore, but I've got it at home, yeah.
I think I do have one of those. But, on this show, we don't want to just talk about the comebacks of, flip phones, because flip phones was just a few years ago. If you want to do retro comebacks, we're going to take you back into time. And that's why we found a DIY project that you can buy for $170. And it is the rotary cell phone.
Yeah, this is actually, it's completely stupid, really, really cool.
So what it is, remember the good old days of, telephones. You have a rotary dial, you got to, spin one number till the end of the cycle and then let it go. And then it makes this springy sound, which you don't get on phones these days. So forget about flip phones and the enjoyment of, slamming it shut.
Yeah, no buttons.
Just flip phones, just rotary dials. What it has, it also has a 2.1-inch e-paper display. It also has a 24-hour battery life. And you can't tweet on this, that's for sure.
No, but you can presumably receive tweets if you put the hardware in. You can read them off your screen. But,
It's $170. You can buy it online. There's like a whole kit and it's DIY. So you're actually building your own kind of cell phone. And it's not as easy as you think, though. I've went onto the site itself. Like the engineer, Justin Haupt, he mentioned on the site that there is a lot of things.
She
needs, she said that you will need a lot of things in order to actually create the full complete version.
Because you're buying some of the chips and some of the 3D printed board, but you have to get a hold of a specific Western digital rotary dial that actually fits with it. So they're quite hard to get hold of. And you have to buy specific circuit boards from various manufacturers. You have to check that they conform with the GSM antennas in your country. So, it's not for the faint-hearted.
But if you like a DIY project to challenge yourself, go ahead and check out the Rotary Cell Phone DIY Kit. Now then, what do we have for Geek Tunes? And it's a bit of a retro tune again, because this is a long time.
A bit of a cliche. It's to go with this week's MSP. We were talking about building underground. So this is The Jam with Going Underground.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.